Well, aren't you lucky? Finally doing a podcast, and I brought a doctor with me. How awesome is that? Welcome to the inaugural, the first, the top, the tip, the championship, the most tip, top, top cat edition of Minding Our Business. And I got the G snuck in there, and there is no G in this show. Hashtag mob, by the way. If you want anything to do with this program, it's hashtag MOB. But it's minding, apostrophe, or whatever the hell. What would that be, Doc?
It'd be an apostrophe.
Is it an apostrophe?
Yeah,
it is. It would be something else right there. Our business. The voice you just heard, Dr. Wendy Deese, University of Miami Associate Professor, the foremost, and you're not going to fight me on this, the foremost authority on sports sponsorships / marketing / money. I mean, that's what we're here for. I'm Jason Jackson, the 20-time Emmy Award-winning broadcaster, Miami Heat and SiriusXM Radio. Let's talk a little bit about ourselves because that's what this is all about. We don't get interrupted by phone calls or guests. It's just you and I talking about all the great, awesome, trending things in sports business. So it's going to be vast. We're probably going to spend a lot of our time in professional sports, but college sports obviously demands our attention, without a doubt, because there's boatloads of cash. But Dr. Deese, tell the folks all about yourself.
All right. I don't have 20 Emmys, but but anyway, it's
You're
awesome.
You're not alone.
It's awesome to be doing with this with you. I'm so excited. Like Jack said, I'm Dr. Wendy Deese. I'm an associate professor and graduate program director of sport administration at the University of Miami, and been studying and researching sports business and marketing and sponsorship for about 15 years now. And so, like Jack said, it is all about the money, whether people like to admit that or not. So it's going to be awesome talking about how front offices make money and use money. So yeah. Ready to get started.
I have been in this industry. This, for me, would be sports broadcasting. Since I was 18, I was very fortunate to get an awesome internship out of the most rigorous internship evaluation process known to humanity, the En-ROADS program, which has affiliates all over the country, but this is right out of Cincinnati, and there was one internship for me. There are like 50 internships for 300 kids, so the ratio is still pretty terrible, there was only one internship that I would want. It was with the Scripps Howard company, which mostly at that time, remember when there were newspapers?
Mm-hmm.
They mostly owned newspapers, but they also owned whatever the government allowed at that time, that many number of television stations, and one in Cincinnati. And I knew as a young athlete that I was average and probably below average, but I always wanted to be around sports. And so the first thing that made sense to me was broadcasting, mostly because I wanted to be a teacher of young people like yourself, but at the high school level, and coach baseball for my life. And my father said very distinctly, because I remember to this day, I will not subsidize the education of another educator. How about that? He was an educator, and as was my mother. My father decided at a very young age, as a very young father, that if he wanted the life he thought he wanted for himself, he should probably go sell information systems and stop teaching English. And so that's not deterring anyone from that career path. But if you want certain things for yourself, sometimes that costs money. And so he departed and didn't want that life for me, which I think I may find my way into a classroom eventually just because.
I hope so.
Yes, ma'am. Invite me anytime, by the way. I'm happy to speak to your brainiacs at any point. But anyway, so the next thing on the Myers-Briggs career assessment that I took as a sophomore in high school was broadcaster. I was very fortunate. There was an instructional television program in my high school in the mid to late 80s, which was unheard of, but it was fantastic. So the next 2 years, I got to kind of get my hands dirty. And by the time I was in this ridiculously difficult, soul-ripping process of trying to get one of these internships, to the point where I was interviewing with other companies, because I just was like, I'm not going to get out of this process and have no internship if Scripps Howard doesn't select me for this internship at WCPO-TV, which was then the CBS affiliate in Cincinnati. It's now ABC. But I'm going to go work at like Hemmer Construction or some. I'm going to make some hot dogs with chili on it. Cincinnati people know what's up there. something was going to occur out of this. But anyway, fortunately, I got the internship I wanted, and that started this beautiful love affair with understanding and learning how to communicate to people in this awesome space, which for a long time was still the last good news. You know, the news had turned into death and destruction. Weather can change your disposition, but sports was still like the good news. And for me, everything changed with OJ. Like, that's when it all started to bleed together and sports became news, and news departments found out that there was such an interest in sports and sports figures that they would jump on those stories. And so the mid-90s, everything changed. And then I found out I got to be around the games. The games will not change. There'll be innovations. The players will get stronger and faster. The money that comes into these games will change, but the games will always be the games. And so you're going to have to hit a home run. You're going to have to shoot a three. You're going to have to score a touchdown. And all the other sports that I did not just mention, the competition is where it's at for me. So still having this love and interest about the business around my business leads us to minding our business. So while you're busy.
Yeah.
You ready?
Let's jump right in.
Let's get to our first topic, which is going to be a little dated for people when they probably first hear this. But it caught me and disturbed me that the worldwide leader in sports would mess with perfection. For those people that dive inside everything ESPN, you realize what maybe some people don't. When they have a huge product, NBA Finals, the national championship for football, whatever they find, a women's national championship for basketball, whatever it is that they have that's massive, they will use their platforms to put on the same event, but with a different twist, a little change of venue. That's also the case for the national championship playoff for college football. And they struck gold. And what they did is they packed a room full of coaches for one of the channels. So they have their brainiacs, you know, they're the smart aleck, roundtable, talking head people. That's probably on one channel. And then the game itself on another channel. And they probably put some other stuff on another channel. They have ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPNU, and Deportes. They can go buck wild as it pertains to their platforms on cable and satellite streaming as well, obviously. And so you get the game with Herb Street and Fowler and whomever they have rolling sidelines. I should probably know exactly who that is.
Maria Taylor and then,
yeah, and probably Rutledge. What's her first name?
Is it Laura Rutledge.
Laura Rutledge.
With the SEC.
That's probably who they probably have.
Probably
on
be the
games.
Core.
Exactly. And so the next channel that I think is probably the most enjoyable channel for any freakazoid football fan was the Coach's Room. It's fantastic. And other channels like NBA TV have done this. You get the best minds that you can get that are willing to take some time off, maybe make a little cachiche.
Well, they have current and former coaches, so it's the best of both worlds.
And they're sitting there watching the game like coaches and talking to you, and you get brought into this universe that none of us, not even professional observers, get to come into. It's fantastic. They've decided to ruin that. Why, you're going to tell me?
Well,
by putting Monday Night Football's crew, which I'm going to be nice and say that group is controversial in the sense of where you once were, the history of that product, and how you decided to present it. So this isn't necessarily an assessment of Booker McFarlane and Jason Witten and Joe Tessitore, as well as one of my favorite sideline and courtside reporters, Lisa Salters. This is just me saying, okay, I get it. You're trying to push forward your number one football team, but you're putting them in a space they know nothing about, not from not being able to prepare and get ready.
Right.
They don't cover college football.
Yeah, and ESPN, I think, has a history of doing this. They have something great going, and they just want to make it a little bit better. But they want to make it a little bit better by comparing it with a professional product. And so I think what ESPN is trying to do here is they think, okay, well, the college football playoffs are so big and the national championship is so big, and we need to make it more like the NFL. But you don't, because the NFL is what the NFL is, and college sports are totally different. Everyone's used to listening to Herb Street and Fowler and like you said, the great sideline reporters, but I think what they're trying to do is they think they're going to take the analysis up a notch with these, you know, NFL personalities. But everybody, like you said, wants to hear from the college coaches. They want to hear from the people who know the history of the schools and the players and the rivalries and who know the fans. And I think this is what everybody loves about college football, that, you know, these coaches know all the ins and outs of, you know, college life and the game, and they've all been there. And there's just no reason to take the ESPN, you know, coaches film room, which everyone loves, right, and, you know, put the NFL guys in there, because, like you said, they don't watch as much college football. That's not their job. You know, they're watching NFL games and they're breaking down NFL games. And I've said this before with the NBA, and you probably know this, Jax, that, you know, I love Charles Barkley. He's amazing. But every time he starts breaking down March Madness games, I just think, why are we bringing the NBA? Yeah. Why are we bringing the NBA analysts into, you know, March Madness? All of a sudden you can tell the guys don't, you know, watch the game season long.
Yeah.
And it's going to be the same thing with this. These guys just don't watch college football, and they certainly don't have the insight to the extent of the current and the former coaches. And so I think ESPN's trying to ramp up the product and just try to take it to the next level, but it's just not the way to do it.
Joe Tessitore called college games. Both Booger McFarland and Jason Witten played college football. I understand maybe that line that you're trying to connect, and they're maybe have a keen eye to try to assess the talent that's going to be in that game. Obviously, Alabama just keeps cranking folks into the NFL, as does Clemson. So maybe there's something there that they're trying to tap into. It's just not, it won't draw me there where I can hear Herm Edwards say something to the effect, and I think he said this in one of the games the other day. I think it was something he said, oh, there they go with that casino coverage. And the other coaches are looking around going, what are you talking about, her casino coverage? Like, we've never – like, what do you put – he's like, that's when you roll the dice and you push everything to the center of the table. And if you hit, it's awesome. But if you don't, you lose.
Herm Edwards is amazing, by the way. Herm Edwards is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I just think, you know – it doesn't make sense also because these NFL guys actually don't have the greatest reviews from the NFL fans.
Yeah.
So
that's a whole nother episode.
It only takes a little bit of reading the comments on Twitter to realize that, you know, everyone's not loving the fact that that Witten and Tessitore are going to come in and, you know, call college football when they're not loving them necessarily on Monday Night Football.
No.
So it's just – it's an interesting move, but I think ESPN's going to realize really quick the coach's film room was where it's at.
We went off the top swinging. I don't know if we – you know, maybe should have got a little positive off the top. I'm not sure. Maybe learning about us was the positive, and then we came in with the hammer next. Let's move to our next headline in the National Basketball Association. The NBA jersey patch was something that at first I was so European. This is so not us. We don't need this extra dollar, this extra dime. But this actually came from just the way things were going to change with the jersey changing from the manufacturer of Adidas, which had the deal for so long with the NBA, to Nike. And it was really going to provide an open space, honestly, on the jersey. And I assume if you're a multimillionaire and or a billionaire, you tend to embrace money-making opportunities. And the smart folks who are in charge of sales and marketing at the league office in New York don't miss a beat ever. And so this really has gone well. I'm not sure. I think there's still a couple teams that still haven't sold that space still.
Just one.
So that's amazing. So the first year it was half the league, and then nearly damn near half the league did it again in the next year. Why is this so lucrative for a company to have that type of space?
Well, I think it's funny that you start off saying that you didn't think this was going to happen.
Oh, it's genius now, please.
Oh, it's genius Come now. On. Of course yeah. it is.
No,
it's
I knew it would happen. I didn't like it. I said, this is not, we're not NASCAR. This is not European soccer. You know, not realizing that, you know, WNBA has been doing this all over their jersey for years. And but now this is just raking in hundreds of thousands of dollars, I assume.
Yeah. Well, you're not the only one. I mean, everyone said the U.S. four professional, you know, pro leagues would not have corporate names on jerseys. And people said that for years. I heard people say, oh, that'll never happen. That'll never happen. And I just always said, oh, it'll happen. It's just there's a certain amount of money that will make it happen. And it's interesting also that you said that the WNBA has had corporate names on their jerseys for years.
I mean, like full jersey, right? Like not this little patch either.
Right. Full name, full brand name on the jersey since 2009, I believe. But anyway, like you said, it's interesting how the NBA always tends to go first on this. We already know the NBA is, you know, the most innovative league. They're certainly willing to take calculated risks, you know, business-wise. And I think that started a long time ago with Commissioner Stern. And that's just become their calling card now, that the NBA kind of goes first with these types of things. And then the other leagues, you know, look to see how that rolls out. But, yeah, we're down to there's only one, you know, team left that doesn't have a jersey patch deal. But in terms of the impact that this has had, I mean, it's only a 2.5-inch by 2.5-inch piece of real estate on the jersey, but it's valuable to the tune of this last NBA season, $137 million in new revenue for the NBA just in the jersey patches. So this is revenue that the NBA did not have before selling this little valuable piece of real estate. And in 2018, the NBA surpassed $1 billion in sponsorship revenue for the very first time in the history of the league. And it's predominantly because of this new stream of revenue that they did not have. And now the NBA is sitting at number two in sponsorship revenue for the leagues, just behind the NFL. The NFL is at $1.32 billion in sponsorship revenue. Mm-hmm. And the NBA is now $1.12 billion.
Oh, nipping at the heels.
Oh, they are
right
there.
Of the great monster.
Uh-huh. They are right there. And to give you some perspective, MLB's only at $892 million, and the NHL is at about $560 million. So, I mean, this is closing the gap for the NBA, mm-hmm. and it's a huge amount of revenue that they didn't have before. And, you know, I think that last deal's coming here soon.
So there's always this debate of basketball-related income. And I'm not sure, I haven't seen any documentation nor any real debate about what that patch becomes as it pertains to the collective bargaining agreement and sharing that pool of money as they do with their players at the tune of somewhere between 51 and 47%, depending upon the sliding scale and how it's impacted by how well the league did that previous year. This being new revenue in the last 2 years, I just wonder how this is going to spill into the pool of salary, if at all. Because here's the interesting thing about merchandise that most people probably don't know about the NBA. Years ago, the Players Association negotiated a flat fee for every single player. So LeBron gets the same check for merchandise from the NBA that pick anybody at the end of any bench. That guy. The two-way, well, probably not the two-way player, but the 14th or 15th guy on any team. I'm not going to say any names because then somebody's going to be upset.
Right, don't
but
hurt anybody's feelings.
Don't get all
the
upset,
holidays.
Exactly. So it's interesting that's probably, I'm talking myself into understanding about what's really happening here. There'll be no real change. That the pool may increase and then the separation of how it goes, you know, it's divided by 450. You know, that's how many players or player spots there are. Not every team has 15 players on their roster. So this is heavily coming into the ownership and league pocket more so than it's coming to the player who, by the way, happens to be wearing the jersey that's being touted in front of all these television cameras.
Absolutely. And it's still a case of the haves and the have-nots because these jersey patch deals are, they're averaging $6.5 million annually. But you've got the Cavs and the Warriors up at the top, and the Warriors are making $20 million a year for 3 years, getting $60 million from Akuten. And Rakuten's the Japanese e-commerce company. You know, and then you've got Sacramento getting, you know, just a couple of million from Blue Diamond Almond. So,
right. So your market matters. Right. Your market matters.
Your market absolutely matters. And so, you know, the top five deals are, you know, Cavs, Warriors, Lakers, Celtics, and 76ers since they went first in terms of the ones that are delivering the most value. And then everybody's kind of scattered in between there. Yeah. So you know the teams are going to want to keep their own money if they're up at the top. If you're down at the bottom, you're like, hey, let's share. Let's, you know, let's spread this out. Right. So, you know, each team's driving their value there. And that's, you know, dictated by a lot of different factors, you know, media market and wins and losses and star players and all that. So it will be interesting to see. I think especially it'll be interesting to see in about 2 to 3 years, because these are only about 2 to 3 year deals. Mm-hmm. And so when they come up, you know, are they going to get renewed and for how much? And because they're already showing value.
Sure.
So we have analytics companies like GumGum Sports who look at how much these jersey patch sponsors, you know, get seen and how much awareness there is of these. And early estimates are they're fleshing out at being worth $250 or $300 million in media value that they're bringing in, because, you know, on social and digital, and, you know, they're right there where everybody sees these company names and all the players and the posting that they do on social. And so if they really are delivering $250 to $300 million in value at only $6.5 million a year these companies are paying, you would think that they are going to renew and that maybe the next round of deals could be bigger.
I think Goodyear's going to be on the phone to Cleveland immediately. That was a deal made with LeBron James in the mix. So I look forward to seeing how that one changes. Let's keep it in the NBA. And this story is so awesome for me because I remember the first NBA player to have a really awesome platform in India. And it was Chris Bosh. Chris Bosh really? Went to India as really the first large ambassador before the league really had a strong footing in India, a place where they're really trying to grow the game. And so much so, the NBA will have its first game there as the Indiana Pacers and the Sacramento Kings will play in 2 preseason games coming up this fall in Mumbai, marking the first games the NBA has played in India and the first game staged in the country by a North American sports league, period.
Period.
So the NBA is getting in here into some fertile ground where there's, I don't know what, 1 billion people?
Yeah.
Another country with 1 billion people in it?
The NBA, I think their globalization strategies are just so fascinating. Again, it's a continuation of what David Stern started, and they're just amazing. I mean, what they've done in China is incredible. And, you know, you've seen Kobe and Steph over there and all the great things that they've been able to do. And they've been really strong ambassadors. And they've got their foothold really well in China. And they're moving on. So I just think it's amazing what they're doing. And these two games are going to be really special to watch, I think, next season.
I'm sorry, 1.3 billion people.
1.3 billion.
In India. I've been on a trip to China. With the Miami Heat, and this was during the height of the LeBron, James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh era, and I was physically moved by the intensity of the popularity of the individual players, the teams, and the embracing of the game. There is a distinct passion that rivals anything that we have right here inside our own borders for these games. Think about what time they have to get up to watch the games. I'm sure there's a lot of recording and playing, but there's some people that want to see these things live at 2, 3, 4 in the morning, 8 o'clock in the morning, because it's exactly on the other side of the world, and they're either pausing school or work to try to get that done. So to add this market, it's something else. And the thing that you always know is that there's always kind of a four-way first. I understand that there's more than 350 live NBA games that are radiated in India first, and that's every single season. And so there's a little bit of a taste, and then find out if these folks are going to come out for the Basketball Without Border camps. And then slowly but surely, you start implanting junior NBA, you bring over an academy, and now you're growing the game to the level where they're now young Indian players that maybe are 8, 9, 10, maybe even 13 to 15 that are going to pick up these games, and they're the next Joel Embiid, who was in a Basketball Without Borders camp in Cameroon as a more advanced teenager who had not played the game and now is an NBA All-Star.
Yeah, and then it goes on from there, and business-wise, you start seeing you know, brands from these countries infiltrating the league and sponsorships that you haven't seen before. I remember when Dwayne Wade signed with Li-Ning and everybody was like, who? What?
Yeah.
And right. And now that's not even a surprise to see these Asian brands in the U.S. and getting involved in pro sports sponsorship. And like you said, the Warriors have the biggest patch deal with, you know, Rakuten. And so then the next step after all of that is, you know, getting Indian corporations and businesses involved in the league once you get to the point where you've kind of infiltrated that country and all of their fans.
Let me correct myself. The NBA Academy India was already established in May of 2017. So they are already establishing who the top male and female prospects from throughout India are at this point. And so now they're already, you know, 2 years, year and a half down that path. By the time these games show up, you're going to have probably, I don't know, two or three dozen men and women, young men and women, that now get to be around these NBA teams and coaches for what is probably a good part of a week that they'll probably go over there and have these games. This is the stuff that makes this game awesome. It really is.
And the NBA always does their homework. By the time these games show up in these other countries, you know, they've been in that area for years. So it's not a surprise, and the NBA is incredible in their international marketing strategy.
You know what I'm going to start calling this part of the show?
What's that?
The high five.
Okay.
Yeah, because we're usually going to have like five subjects that we're in right now. We're basically past the halfway point. In the high five. Can time we actually high five for the people? That was a real high five. That was not a sound effect.
And time does fly when you're having fun.
Absolutely. Let's go to our fourth topic, and it's one that is dicey. And so this might take us an extra minute or two. And it's the legalized sports gambling around the country that is governed, by the way, people, by state government. And here in Florida, I can see this coming down the avenue. We'll treat this like medicinal weed. We'll blow it the first time, and then the second time we'll bring it around because we'll realize how much money everybody else is making around the country. Was it the state of Delaware first and then Jersey? And now we're slowly rolling out to all these states that will slowly but surely have legalized gambling in their location. And so it's interesting deals with the NBA. They have a gambling partner. The NFL now has gotten in bed with Caesars. I mean, like, it is an actual casino in a town where they're going to have an NFL team. So the whole idea of the drape that used to exist between professional sports and gambling, that's going away.
It's gone.
It's not going away. It's gone.
Mississippi, right. West Virginia, Arkansas, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Rhode Island, D.C. So the states are just rolling along. I mean, it's only going to be a matter of time. But the leagues are on board. I mean, they were ready to go. They were waiting for this. Again, NBA and Major League Baseball, NHL all went first. And it's interesting that, you know, the NFL's, you know, considered the king in terms of the big four sports leagues, but they always kind of hang behind. They wait for like the NBA to dip their toe in the water and see what happens before they jump in. But all the leagues now have an official gaming partner. The deals are all slightly different. You know, the NBA is, you know, their partnership and,
Data-driven
betting, sports books. Logos are going to be allowed in the sports books. NFL's not doing that. Their deal with Caesars Entertainment, they're the official casino, but they're not going so far as to put the shield in the sports books, and it's not a betting partnership. So it's a little bit different, but they certainly took the whatever. It's $20 million a year, whatever that's going to be. But it's not as robust of a partnership as it is for the NBA and Major League Baseball. But this gambling, the legalization of gambling, is going to be just a watershed moment business-wise for these leagues, because the sponsorships are already pouring in. Advertisements are going to blow up. You know, the research tells us fandom-wise that people are much more involved in watching games, attending games, following games whenever they've got money on the line. So all these leagues are going to be looking at viewership numbers. Live attendance numbers are obviously down, so they're hoping that, you know, this helps in that area. But this could impact the leagues to the tune of tens of billions of dollars a year, which is just incredible.
So the Supreme Court ruling that allowed for each state to decide what they want to do for themselves It created a bit of a freedom. The leagues do have to kind of tiptoe to find out how are they going to monetize it, right? Where can they get a percentage on the dollar, an action, the VIG, that was always in the shadows. And so the thing that I've enjoyed, and I know this is going to sound like I'm the NBA shill, but the transparency of the NBA is, yeah, we're trying to identify in each of these locations, each of these state municipalities, how we're going to get our cut, because you're betting on our game and you're using our logos and those are our players. And so there's going to be something that comes our way. How difficult is it going to be for these leagues to manage 50 states and their different legislation and their different regulations?
Yeah, well, I think that's the reason why you're seeing these deals up at the top at the league level, so that it takes some of the complication out of that. And I'm not your sports law person, I'm your marketing person, but I can see why the leagues would want to make these deals. It's just like when you're doing sponsorship deals, right? Whenever you're bringing in the money up at the top and the league's making the deals.
We'll figure it out.
It's just like, okay, we'll bring in the money at the league level. We'll figure out how to, you know, distribute that later. But it takes some of the complication out of that. I think it's interesting, going back to the NFL just briefly, that Roger Goodell said in 2012 that the number one issue that he had with professional football is gambling would be number one on his list in terms of a threat to the integrity of the sport.
Right.
But then all of a sudden, when you realize there are tens of billions of dollars, you know, to be made, suddenly, you know, that all changes. And then, you know, they figure out a way to regulate it and make those deals happen. But
yeah, 90 million, is that what we got for this deal, right?
Yeah,
something
90,
like that.
Yeah,
that'll change your tune.
It'll change your tune really quickly.
The thing that is interesting to me is this is the first deal that MGM didn't get.
Yes,
they
have,
but they're now, again, let's note, those are gambling deals that they have with the NBA, NHL, and Major League Baseball. I think those are far more lucrative. Am I right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know how the NFL came to select Caesars Entertainment. I don't think, since we're just finding out about the deal today,
right,
we don't know all the details on that.
But no gambling in it at this stage.
At this stage. Gotcha. And I think it's because the NFL likes to tiptoe into things. Even though they're the big dog, I think they always like to see what everyone else does first. I think that it's going to come down the line, of course. You know, the betting is going to be there. It's not there right now. But also, in true NFL fashion, of course, Jerry Jones is out in Texas, and he has his WinStar casino deal, and he was the first one to do that. And so that part is very typical of what you see in the NFL with Jerry Jones doing his deal first. But I think we're going to start seeing all the teams that are able to make these deals happen, jump in and sign these casinos and sports books. And we're already seeing, you know, the league start to fill up this betting category. In fact, one of the predictions is that obviously the gambling and the betting category is going to be the biggest growth area for professional sports sponsorship next year. And, you know, as the rest of the states roll out. So
before we move on to our final topic, we should probably note that this exclusive deal for Caesars with the NFL is in the United States and the UK. Right? So give them kudos there.
Yep.
It includes the Super Bowl and the draft as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Caesars will host parts of the 2020 draft, which will be in Las Vegas, for the very first time as the Raiders make their move there. Our last stop in the high five, the thumb or the pinky. What do we want to call this part of the program? One for the thumb? I think that's what I've heard that phrase before. When people are getting their rings and they've had the four championships, they always want to get that last one. The one
I don't know.
For the thumb. You're not feeling that
one
yet?
What about the pinky ring?
Yeah.
That's what I was hearing.
You didn't even say ring. You said rang.
Right.
Come on, Central Florida. Jumped
right.
out of you right there.
I'm not going with the thumb. I'm going with the pinky ring.
Pinky ring. All right. Let's call it the pinky ring. Last one. This one's a little more me than you, but I want you to jump in this one, because I'm so intrigued by this massive deal that's taking forever. It's like watching molasses drip down the table of this final stage of Disney purchasing massive portions of 20th Century Fox. And so basically Fox is keeping their broadcast company, their sports network, their sports department and their broadcast network and their cable stations, Fox Sports 1 and 2. And they're keeping Fox News Channel, which they can have. You have ESPN / ABC Disney getting everything else, which includes the thing that interests me, the 22 regional sports networks, which is where you watch all of your favorite teams, NBA, NHL, and Major League Baseball games throughout your calendar year. It doesn't affect me personally, Heat fans. I'm a Miami Heat employee.
Which was my number one question.
Exactly.
Jax, how does this affect you?
Exactly. Happy to be in partnership with Fox Sports Sun as they impact the bottom line at a high level over there at 601 Biscayne. But I'm not a Fox employee, so this is just intriguing for me to see from afar as I've worked with Fox and worked for ESPN in the middle of my career. This is such an interesting shift that's massive. I thought at one point this was going to be great for ESPN. The Department of Justice said, oh, no, you all are not going to own that much product. Already having a national deal with Major League Baseball, national deal with the National Football League, a national deal with with the NBA, you're not then going to get all of the regional product from sea to shining sea outside of maybe 8 to 10 markets. So they had to divest as part of the deal. They were happy to do so because there's far more money they're going to make by having the movie houses. But this thing is so intriguing because I don't know if this is going to be a sale of 22 pieces to one entity. I'm not going to do math because I'll show a huge deficiency in my skill set, but little pieces going around. Is it going to be 20 there and 2 there? Are we now going into a whole new universe of streaming only as Amazon stands there and beats its billion-dollar chest, maybe trillion-dollar chest at this point? This is going to be so interesting. And then the transferable contracts that exist between teams and these broadcast entities, hopefully transferable.
Hopefully
they're worded that well. And because you didn't see this coming down the avenue even 2 years ago, if you renegotiated your deal, plus all the corporate deals you have from sponsors that have ad space on these shows. Does it make your head explode at all? It makes my head explode.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think when everybody heard it, we were just like, what? I mean, it's a huge, huge deal. And there's speculation that we're going to be seeing the finishing of the deal early this spring. So all of this could be, you know, coming to a close here shortly in early to mid-spring. So, but I think on the sports side of things, it could be really great in terms of giving, you know, Fox more freedom on the sports side of things. And as soon as you mentioned the word streaming, I think that's the most intriguing part of it, since that's where everything's going and there's so much more competition with Amazon and with Facebook and what is it? DAZN, the new company that's jumped in there and is doing a lot with boxing and combat sports. And so I just think this could be a total it could be a not just a transition, but almost like a digital and media revolution coming up here in a little bit, because I don't think we've seen anything like this. Haven't seen it in my time. I don't know about your time, Jax. Not to call you out there, but
yeah,
probably have a little bit more experience than me.
1972, stand up right now.
Yeah, so, this is the biggest sports media business story to watch, and we could be seeing the ending of that coming soon in the next few months. So, pay attention.
In total, Fox Regional Sports Networks and YES Network, which is in this family, air 44 professional teams, including ones, as I mentioned, from Major League Baseball, National Basketball Association, and the NHL. A report that I saw while we're talking, Disney's expected to sell each of these in single pieces now. That's the latest, I mean, like hot off the presses. And you name the companies, Amazon, St. Clair, is it Tenga or Tenja with T-E-N-G-A?
I don't know. You're asking the wrong person. I don't know if it's a GIF or a GIF or a soft G or So, I wasn't even sure. Is it DAZN? Is it DAZN?
Man.
Is it
split them up and sell them separately. That is crazy.
Yeah, this is selling
gonna be a lot of new mic flags out there, everybody.
Selling the car for its parts right here.
Oh my goodness! It's funny, if the DOJ didn't step in and intervene here, this would have been colossal for ESPN to have that type of reach across the country as it pertains to their products. They could create new shows for the ESPN platform that they could regionally throw out, just as the pre and post game and the really leading up to those types of shows, really breathing life into maybe the 6 o'clock Sports Center that they've tried so hard to reinvent and reinvent and fail, and making sure that there's just this constant flow of what's the most important thing in my business now? Content.
Yeah. And if you don't understand the value of these RSNs, these regional sports networks, to put it in perspective, when the networks were seeing declines and when sports ratings were going down during the election year and everyone was, wondering if the NFL was, losing it, falling apart during the election year and that type of thing, the RSNs were thriving. The ratings were up in the regional sports networks whenever, the ESPN and Fox and everyone was seeing, declines everywhere else. So, I mean, these networks are where, like you said, everybody gets their local content, everybody gets their hometown team games, and so they're incredibly, incredibly valuable. And especially when there are so many to sell individually, it could be a huge revenue boost there. So
that's the high five.
That's it.
For minding our business. Now, as we go forward, we can have a little bit of a mailbag, right? If folks want to find you on Twitter, how can they do it?
If they want to find me on Twitter, I'm at GetDsTweets. So that's...
I love that. Oh, my God. I love this woman. Do you all understand that you hear... One more time. Give them that handle one more time.
It's at GetDsTweets. Ah! But that is D's with an S, so get D-E-E-S tweets.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really active on Twitter. Lots of sports biz, marketing, sponsorship stuff. Talking about money all the time and various other things.
Hashtag mob, so we know that that's something they would like for us to deal on the show. If they're asking a question or if they just hit you with a hashtag, we got to do that in the next episode.
We're going to be hashtagging the mob a lot. We're going to be steady mobbing for quite a while now.
Love it. Love it. The mob squad. That's us. I'm at The Jack Show on Twitter. I'm just a carnival barker here. I just keep the thing moving. So
no, you're actually the mob boss.
Oh, I need a pinky ring.
You need a pinky ring.
The pinky ring.
Maybe we'll get
the
pinky
last
rings.
Segment. It's so good. We thank Five Reasons Sports Network for allowing us their space. As we grow this, maybe we'll have our own little space. But right now, we appreciate Ethan and the crew for allowing us a little bit of room to grow.
We're just leasing the space.
That's
right
it.
Now. Exactly. We're hoping to be good tenants.
For Dr. D's, I'm Jax. Always be minding your business.